Fishing, which you can do if you go into Charlotte Harbor right now. The Peace River is still at 9.5 feet. It just came down from about 10.5, which means no red tide in Charlotte Harbor. Nothing from inside Cape Hayes is going to be affected. Matt Lachey's in good shape. Right now, we're getting a little bit more in at Boca Grande Pass. But we have good news, hopefully, on the horizon. And we're going to explain that in just a moment. But for right now, Fish and Frank right here in the chair. And we got the blind tarpon in the chair across from me. Blind tarpon gonna give the fishing report. Okay. Well, I tried. All right. We got RJ in the control center in Chaos Central. And then we have Captain Kale in the guest spot here. What I'm talking about by good news, the wind's supposed to start blowing out of the east. According to everything I've seen on the weather forecast, which, yeah, right, I'm going to believe the weather, but I'm hoping that for once the weather people are going to get this right. If the wind starts blowing out of the east today, as it's supposed to, that should blow that red tide back out of Boca Grande Pass, out of Lemon Bay. It should get us a little bit more. This is, for the first time, becoming concerning for me. Up until now, I haven't been too upset about the red tide because it kind of comes, goes, things happen, things don't happen. The red tide is kind of a, it's a thing out there. We've been dealing with it as long as I've been in business. And the one thing that's magnificent about Charlotte Harbor, and now I'm talking about from Cape Hayes north up in the upper harbor, is it's almost impossible to get red tide up here because of the Peace River and Myakka River. The fresh water coming out of the rivers kills the red tide. It doesn't come up here. There's no blue-green algae up here. There's just plain old brown water. And I love the old dirty brown water in the Peace River. Because if it wasn't brown, I couldn't afford to live here. I mean, the point of the fact is, if the Peace River had crystal clear water in it and Charlotte Harbor was blue and, you know, you could see 20 feet down to the bottom, the property here would be so expensive, most of us could not live here.
No, I mean, very true.
Yeah, definitely.
So, same with anywhere on the Myakka. Myakka River and the Peace River are virtually the same with that.
Yeah, the Myakka River, it's got that wonderful brown water. It allows us to be able to afford to live on it, to play in it, fish in it, do all that. And it just, to me, it's an awesome thing. But it is, every summer, a brownish-red color. So when you see the red color, no, that's not red tide. That's the leaves of the oak trees and the mangroves and all that making the water look brown and red. And if you don't think so, go to most rivers in Canada and you'll see the same thing. They have the tannic acid in the water and most of the rivers are brown. Not as much where you have the pine trees, but wherever you got oak trees, you're pretty much going to have brown water.
Easiest way to explain it is take a cup of hot water, look at it, and then drop a tea bag inside of it and watch it for another 5 minutes and see what happens. Because that's the exact thing that all these leaves are doing to our waters.
Yeah, and it's just...
not quite as good tasting as your regular Earl Grey tea, but...
yeah, I'm still more of a Lipton guy, I don't know. All right, getting around to it. Let's go to fishing. Robert, what does the blonde tarpon have to say about redfish on the east side of the harbor?
They're all over the place. I mean, they're doing really good up and along the mangroves, some of the deeper potholes. Look at the mouths of the creeks, but you're also starting to see some schooling fish out there. There's schools from the skating rink, which is just above Alligator Creek on the east side, all the way down to Two Pines. Just a matter of getting out there and getting early enough to get into them, or hope you're lucky enough that a couple of the boats that are already sitting on them are set up properly where you can kind of get into the mix and bounce that school between the boats.
Playing ping pong with redfish is, started out in Titusville. There's a couple areas in Titusville where you're not allowed to use your motor and everything else. And the boats would go up in there, and they'd have one boat, and then a couple hundred yards away or 100 yards away, they would put another boat. And the guys would catch one redfish. The school would turn around and start going the other way. And that boat would hook up with a redfish. The school would turn around and head back towards the first boat. And they learned to play ping pong with the redfish. And a lot of the guys have picked up that technique here. It works very well down by Burnt Store, Pirate Harbor area. We've got some shallow kind of enclosed flats with a sandbar on one side. You've got the mangroves on the other. And you can literally get those schools of redfish kind of right between you. And they will go from one boat to the other, to the other, to the other. As long as the boats aren't too close and people don't slam a live well hatch or a deck lid or something, if you're pretty quiet, those fish will just literally bounce in between the boats for several hours. It's quite astounding to see. Kale, any news on the redfish?
Starting to see more and more of your breeder redfish coming up into the harbor and sticking around the outsides of the bars. They can be hard to find. They're moving around quite a lot.
This is a little bit early for that. Usually I would figure, but it is the middle of September, I guess.
Usually their breeding period is the full moon in October or August to the full moon in October. We're actually kind of late on them. I think September's
full moon. Usually I'm not red October and November. I guess you could be right. They start in September, it peaks out in October, then goes through November. For an area that doesn't have redfish, we seem to have a lot of them.
And
even if you don't find the schools, there's enough fish scattered around over inside Bull Bay, Turtle Bay, and along the west wall. You know, Turtle Bay's got that usual little school that sits right behind that main oyster bar at the front entrance, but you've got a lot of singles and doubles kind of scattered up and down along the bushes and deeper cutoffs.
Yep. So a lot of cool stuff going on. Speaking of lots of cool stuff going on, RJ, you're fishing for bass in ditches lately, I think.
It was completely surprised me. The guys told me that they were catching bass out of this fast-flowing ditch behind a friend's house. And I'm like, yeah, right. So I went and got my pole, went out in the back, and within 5 minutes I had a bass on the line. And then I put that guy back and walked 10 feet down the edge of the ditch, and I had another one. It's the one I took the picture of. So I was completely fooled by that. But, yeah, there's certainly bass just about everywhere, like you were saying last week.
It's just amazing how people think you got to go to this certain lake and do this and do that. And in Southwest Florida, if you've got a ditch with some water moving in it, chances are there's a fish in it.
Yep.
I mean, it's just astounding. But one pair of bass in Southwest Florida can populate out 22 acres a year. I mean, they go actually quite a ways because in the northern areas, you got ducks and geese trying to carry fish eggs from one place to another. But down here, we have ducks, several different kinds. We've got herons, wood storks, cranes, egrets, just a dozen different wading birds all going through those same waters. So the eggs just go everywhere with these birds. And it's shocking how many bass there are. And you found them in a ditch. Now, I got to ask, what were you using?
Rubber worm.
All right, purple, red?
I've used a purple on the first one, and I used a brown on the second one. The purple worm got tore up pretty good, so I stuck a new worm on. And all I did is I cast it up. And there was a couple of trees overhanging the ditch. I cast it up ahead of the tree, let it drift down through. I just free-bailed it all the way through until it went down far enough, and both times I got hit before I had flopped the bail over.
That's awesome. I mean,
can't beat that.
You know, people forget that when you cast a fishing pole out, you do not have to close the bail and tighten up right away. You can leave the bail open and feed line out with your hand. Sometimes you got to flick the tip a little bit, but just keep feeding some line out, and it allows that worm, bait, live bait, dead bait, plastic worm, whatever it is, to drift along with the current. Look like it's getting washed along. And it's an amazing technique, and it's an amazing presentation. And all it's done is by leaving your bail open, pull some line off the spool, kind of flick your rod tip to get it out, and just let the current take it along, make it look like it's being washed out with the current. That's why moving water in a lot of these places makes it a lot easier to catch fish like bass and snook and all these other ones. Because once the water's sitting still, you've really got to get more on target. With this, you're letting it drift along. You were casting up current from the tree and then allowing it to drift past the tree.
Right.
The question is, were they hitting it right before the tree or after?
Right after the tree. It was like as soon as it came out of the shadow, I got nailed. So,
that's pretty cool.
You know, from fishing up north most of my life for smallmouth bass in the rivers, that's pretty much the technique is they're not going to come running around looking for your lure moving its way upstream. No. And it's also not natural. You're not finding a lot of bait and critters swimming against the current. They're just sitting in the eddies and the over underhangs and things like that, waiting for stuff to come by. So that's what you present to them is, you know, here's a meal, it's coming by, have at it, boys.
Well, it's calories. You know, if a fish can just kind of hang out and ambush something as it comes by, there's a lot less energy expended than going swimming up current or around trying to find food. So it's about how much calories you burn versus how much calories you can take in. And kind of basic wilderness survival. Robert, a question. We talked about there was a lot of redfish on the east side, west side, even over by Bull and Turtle Bay. What kind of, are they using lures? Are they using bait? What's going on over there?
They're using both. I mean, crabs and frozen shrimp and then pinfish are by far your best live baits or natural baits to be using right now. And with the pinfish, they're catching them on them live or cut up. So use them both ways. Don't be afraid to take that fresh, lively pinfish and cut them in half, and you'd be surprised at the results. But also, this is the time of year where, even though we tend to stick with high-scented baits like your DOAs or...
High-scented? Is that like strong, something I should be
scented.
Aware of from the 70s here?
Strong.
Oh,
Chanel
man.
Number 5, right?
Was that a Cheech and Chong movie?
Oh, can you... Yeah, man, that bait's like really smells good, man. Okay.
Bait's not here, man.
Yeah, bait's not here.
Strong-scented baits. You know, usually we're using...
That was good, Cal. Bait's not here, man.
Gulp, DOA... Z-Man, or use like Procure, something that's got a very good scent to it, because the fish are really going by smell than they are sight. But the surprising one that has always puzzled me, and I learned this from Danny years ago, is that the weedless gold spoon in September and October works so unbelievably well on redfish this time of year. But the key thing is the downsize. Most people use a 3/4 ounce or a 1/2 ounce. Drop down to 1/2 ounce or realistically 1/4 ounce.
Or even the 1/8.
Yeah, and it's amazing with how well it works. You know, I get frustrated because I'm a horrible spoon fisherman, but...
It's hard to reel that slow.
Yeah.
To catch fish on a spoon, you've almost got to back down. I mean, if it's rolling over and it's spinning... You're going too fast. It's got a flutter behind the line, right. Side to side, kind of a downward smiley face curve type motion where the back of the lure goes to the left and goes down and goes to the right, goes to the left and goes down. It's that fluttering that really brings those redfish on.
Right.
And it's getting harder and harder because they keep making these reels faster and faster.
Oh, it makes me nuts. Now, you know, one guy, they wanted to sell me a reel. It was 7-1. And
a spinning reel.
How am I going to go that slow with a lure? It's fine when the water is 75 degrees. But when you're dealing with, you know, this hot water, yeah. I'd like a 4-1 retrieve or a 3-1. Something I could slow down and actually not have to reel. Okay, turning the handle. Now I'm going to the bottom. I'm coming back to... That makes me crazy, you know?
Yeah.
That's why a lot of times I'll take these little tiny, tiny reels because the spool is so small on like a 1,000 or a 1,500 that it doesn't take much lineup when you go around. It doesn't.
Right.
A 3,000 or 4,000 takes another inch or two a line back every time it goes around, but the smaller the reel, the less line it's bringing in.
Absolutely.
So a lot of times when it gets really hot, I'm switching down to very small reels just so I can go slow enough with my lures. And a little trick I haven't shared before, but that's actually one of the things I do. I'm really looking for the smallest diameter spool I can possibly get so I can go slow.
Which makes a lot of sense. I mean, it makes it a lot easier. And then for me, with a spoon, I'm going to throw a weedless spoon. That really forces me to remember to slow down as much as possible, because I'll actually jig it a lot of times and let it flutter to the bottom and then bring it back up in a couple little short cranks, let it sink back to the bottom. You know, I'll change my retrieve up a lot with that.
Now, here's one thing I'm going to tell you. This is going on in Charlotte Harbor right now. Bull Bay, the east side of the harbor, the west wall, the Mayaca Cutoff, all these places, Burnt Store, Two Pines, Indian Fields, Matt Lachey. All this is actual fishing going on right now. This isn't yesterday or a week ago or whatever. You can go out and do this. Get off the social media cycle of, oh my God, the world's ending. The river's still flowing at 9 feet, and hopefully we're going to start getting some more rain. If we lose the river water, then the red tides could come up in the harbor. But right now, Shaw Harbor's fine. There's no problems, no issues. Go out and enjoy yourself. There is, you know, it's all good. Now, there are places that we're hearing about, Booker and Pass, Lemon Bay, have been recently re-inundated with red tide. And the red tide is starting to worry me, because this is not what should be happening. Now, I don't know what's doing the red tide right now. I can tell you one thing that is not causing red tide in Boca Grande, Venice, or anywhere else. That's the Coosatchie River. So, for some reason or other, this is persisting, but we've got to start looking north of us to figure out what's really going on, because something north of us, up in the current up there, is actually something bad happening north of us. Otherwise, these red tides would all be south. Now, there is south red tides south of the Coosatchie River, which it could be contributing to, but it's just physically impossible for it to contribute to things north of it. It's the wrong way up the current. But I don't really know what's going on, but it is starting to worry me. This is the first time I've been worried with this last thing, because it's actually taking a lot of oxygen out of the water. So it's not just killing fish, it's killing crabs and some other stuff. So this is actually a bit disconcerting at this point. But the reality is, this is Southwest Florida, and one thing I can tell you, and I promise you, that there are some places that are just fine and some places that are bad. And the truth is, look for the good places, because there's an awesome amount of stuff going on down here. You can go out in Charlotte Harbor, you can catch all kinds of fish, you have a good time. Now, how far out into the Gulf of Mexico do we have to go right now to get past the red tide? I've heard like 8 to 10 miles out.
Yeah, and it just depends on the area, but without having to just flat out guess, if I were going to go out, I wouldn't be going stopping until I hit 15-mile mark.
All
that
right.
Seems to be kind of the better number for where people are catching fish more consistently, because they're running into small patches of red tide from 3 miles to about 12 miles out.
Okay.
So 55 to 60 feet of water is what I'd be looking for.
Cale, have you heard anything out there?
I've heard about the same thing that you have, that 8 to 10 mile mark, but I'm with Robert. I'm going to pass 15 miles just because it's better fishing.
Okay.
I don't care what the red tide's doing. I'm going to go 15, 20 miles out anyways.
RJ, any opinions?
God, I have no idea on that one.
All right.
It's not a bass in a ditch.
Right.
It's not a bass in the ditch. I don't care.
There was no red tide in the ditch, so yeah. I was happy.
I like ditch bass. Yeah, buddy. Ditch bass. Okay.
Well, I want to mention something, too, here.
That was with a D, by the way.
You're going back to the bass fishing. One thing I didn't put on the fishing report that I should have is the Mayan cichlids and the tilapia fishing. I know we talked about it briefly last week with the report, but it's still going off really, really good, along with your bass fishing everywhere. But that tilapia and Mayan cichlid bite, like up in the Myakka River here, all these little local parks right here on River Road, going out to the Myakka River, up on the Peace River, Gulf Cove. I mean, the big tilapia being caught out there in Inglewood and the Rotunda area in those canals. I've had guys coming in with pictures of 3.5 and 4 pound tilapia.
And that's an awesome fight. Picture catching a 4 pound crappie, or a 4 pound bluegill, rather.
Right.
I mean, they've got excellent fighting skills. They're tall and flat, like a bluegill shape, so they can get crossways to you. They really pull. They really go for it. RJ, are you a tilapia Mayan cichlid fisherman?
I'll catch them if they're available. I've got to add to the story. I got a neighbor down the street from me in El Jobin who's got a small smokehouse. And I watch for when the smoke starts coming out. And now smoke's coming out. I went down and say, what are you smoking? Because I love smoked fish, and he's got a whole load of tilapia in there.
Bait's not here, man.
Yeah, bait's not here. Them some happy tilapia. So.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And it's cool because every year we get little reports of when the tilapia bite goes on, where they're cooperating and eating worms or minnows. And then a lot of times it's mostly just accidental bycatch. But for it to be going on, we're going on 3 weeks now of very consistent anglers going out, coming in, buying 1, 2, 3 cups of wigglers or night crawlers and beetle spins and catching them on both consistently.
All right. Here's what you boys and girls want to listen to. Pay attention now. Stop. Okay, put your pencils down. Pay attention. Here's one of the secret tricks that we have found out about catching Mayan cichlids and tilapia. And it's working great on both of them. You ready? Okay, here it comes. Now, I've warned you so you can pay attention. You take a beetle spin, and then you take a little piece of night crawler and put it on the hook as a tippet. You know, a lot of people put shrimp on their jig head right on the hook and make it a little more tasty. What we've been finding out, the guys who are really kicking butt on the Mayan cichlids and the tilapia are using a beetle spin tipped with a piece of nightcrawler, and it's been just going crazy. And it's not something, and it's kind of embarrassing. I never actually considered or thought of, I got stuff falling over, man. I guess I was eating sloppy. I guess something was stuck to my shirt. My God, what the heck's
and
going on?
None of us wanted to say anything. We all knew.
Yeah, well, I got a camouflage shirt on. It's hard to see the food stains.
Right.
That's why I like these shirts. Yeah, I know you couldn't tell, but it, you know, hey, it's honesty in broadcasting. Something fell off my shirt. All right. But this has been an amazing thing. They love to eat the worms and the night crawlers, and they love chasing the beetle spins, but to put the two together, out of this world.
Pretty impressive.
And I wish to say I would have thought of it, but I never even considered it. Never a moment. Kale, you ever thought about putting a nightcrawler in a beetle spin?
We used to tip our Mr. Twisters with nightcrawlers for walleye up north.
And we used to do the Eerie Deeries with that.
I would have never even crossed my mind.
To do it with a beetle spin.
Yeah, to do it with a beetle spin.
Even though it's that obvious. That's the funny part. None of us have given that thought.
RJ, you ever thought about it?
Nope, not at all.
To me, and I know it seems like we're talking a little bit about it, but think of it when you have a bait that you know they like, a lure that you know they like, and then you put the two of them together. Hello, Captain Obvious, but here's four guys who fish, and we have sports writers in the room, we've got radio people, we've got charter boat pick. Not one of us ever thought of it.
Nope.
Absolutely amazing.
Peanut butter and chocolate.
Right.
Something simple.
Exactly.
But, hey, it's pretty impressive, you know, so. But the main thing is go out there and take advantage of it. Fish.
Okay, I'm redeemed. It's a piece of the plasterboard from where I was working on the remodel this morning. Because, you know, we're making Fish and Frank's twice as big as it is now. And it wasn't food that fell off my shirt. It was a piece of the roofing paneling, drywall stuff. So I am redeemed. I'm not as sloppy as I thought I was.
Okay. Yeah, we're sending that out for analysis. We want to be sure.
Okay.
So take advantage of these tilapia and Mayan cichlids and probably one of the better areas to find.
Ooh, I don't want you touching me. Don't. Help. Me too.
Jeez.
Somehow this is going off the rails today, and I have no control whatsoever.
Yeah, you're supposed to have this under control over there.
Yeah, I know.
Don't abuse me.
There's that little boat ramp that is off of Placida Road there in Gulf Cove that opens up into a little lagoon that goes out the main canal that comes out of Cattle Dock Point onto the Mica. That little lagoon and that boat ramp has got a couple little finger docks there, and I've got a couple customers that have been doing very well there catching them.
What?
The Mayan cichlids and tilapia. You were busy playing with your drywall stuff. Pay attention.
Try to keep up.
It gets hard.
And then let me add to the tilapia fishing here. If you've been eating tilapia from frozen from the grocery stores, It's kind of like, why would you want to eat tilapia?
It's a little fishy, and it's a little mushy.
Well, you know, they're raised in giant tanks, and they're fed Gaines meal, and everything tastes like what it eats.
Oh, no, it's worse. They're farming cobia in offshore pens.
Ah, jeez.
They fill up these pens with so many cobia, they were having problems with the cobia poop polluting the area. So now they are putting tilapia underneath them.
Oh, amazing.
To keep the area clean.
Now.
And that is why I don't eat farm-raised tilapia.
Yeah, and same thing with the salmon, too. I won't eat the farm-raised. But if you catch a tilapia in our local waters here, and you put that sucker in a frying pan, that is some nice eating.
That's really excellent
fish to eat. So don't hold your nose on the idea of, I don't want to eat tilapia, I don't want to fish for tilapia.
They're flakier, they're milder, got a little bit more oil in them, but it's a much flakier, milder meat than anything you can buy in a store. And it's just, like as you said, I think that's hits the nail exactly on the head, what they eat. If you take a cow, every idiot out there, hipster, yuppie, whatever they are, they all think grass-fed is some kind of good beef. That's the most garbage beef you can buy. The reason that all the beef manufacturers are promoting this is because they don't have to feed them grain.
Or corn.
Or corn, worse. Yeah.
They don't have to send them to the feedlots in Wisconsin where they grain them up on corn and other stuff. But
it costs much less. I mean, probably half to bring a grass-fed cow to market than it does a grain-fed cow. And you can take them right from the field, stringy, nasty, and put them right in the grocery store, call it grass-fed, and these hipsters love it.
And you can charge double for it.
Right. Yeah, they charge extra money. It's kind of like when the gas companies, remember when they went to unleaded gas? Now, if you're old enough to remember that, when they actually had to put the lead in, and at that point, leaded gas was probably $1.30 a gallon, and unleaded was $1.45. So they were charging us extra not to add the lead to the gas. And here they're charging extra not to feed, take care of, and go through the extra steps to make the beef tasty. They're just telling you it is.
Well, you know, go to Burn Steakhouse in Tampa and ask the guys there, because they raise their own beef. Ask them what they feed them.
They're going to tell you corn, grain, and rice.
Yeah. I mean, that's what they do. They give the cows or the beef cows good stuff to eat.
Yeah, because it tastes good.
Tastes
good to them, but then they taste good to us. It all works. A big circle. Okay, anyway, and all of us old guys know that, and that was just kind of rehashing for you guys. We all know what real beef is supposed to taste like, and that was just something in case there was a kid listening. You know, you're getting suckered. Don't believe what you see on TV or the internet. It's not all true, believe it or not. Let's see. Black Drum, still doing big in the area. And this is, I would say, we're coming into some of the best time for actually catching Black Drum in the canals and stuff. They've been out in the harbor in the big schools. Robert, what's going on in the canals?
PGI is still probably the key place to fish for them, mostly at the mouths of the canals, you know, whether it's Ponce de Leon, Colony Point, Bass Inlet, just to name a couple of them, but any of the mouths and the entrances of the canals have been most ideal with consistent numbers of.
Yeah, I'm gonna call that one. I don't actually believe that's true. I think you need a bridge. I think you need a bridge. What do you think?
I agree. We're seeing a lot of them.
No, you can choose. Do you think Robert's right with the mouths of the canals, or do you think I'm right with the bridges?
I think you stand a better chance of catching them at the bridge than you do the mouth of the canals.
All right, Robert, I'm going to let you defend yourself.
No, I'm good.
Why do you think why do you think the mouths of the canals and not, why didn't you mention the bridges? Like, because to me, if you got a bridge there, I think you get a much better chance of catching a black drum than just the mouth of a canal.
Because it seems like that's the spot where they're hanging the most. And I'm going to say mostly because of the heavier moving water right now coming out of the canals. Because there's been some pretty strong tides the last several days. But the entrances of the canals usually this time of year tend to hold more fish in general, because it's opening up into the main part of the body of the harbor. You've got a lot of good water flow. You've got a lot of little drop-offs along the edges of the seawalls. So you've got current, which is going to create a little bit more oxygen. And you've got deep water access, which allows them to get down a little bit deeper where it's just a little bit cooler. And it's a pinch point with plenty of flow coming out with all of our freshwater spillways and everything else flowing. It's washing nutrients out, which is like the crabs, little shrimp, and other critters getting pushed out. So it's just been a good all-around. It creates the perfect kind of ecosystem that they like this time of year.
RJ, does that sound like a guy just trying to save his reputation, or did that actually sound real?
No, I'm actually going to go along with him on that.
He's right. He is absolutely right. All those parameters that he listed, you can also find at the bridges. Here's your big difference. Are they on that canal or that canal? Or that canal a mile down? Or are they at this canal? Are they at that canal later? Or this canal earlier? The 41 bridge doesn't move. They're
so,
there.
So you're saying that because the bridge is there, it's good habitat, it's a more likely
Absolutely.
Though Robert's right about being at the mouth of the canal, you do have to choose the right mouth of a canal.
Right.
So if you're looking for a bridge, they seem to like it. I'm guessing because of the crabs, oysters, barnacles, whatever.
All of the above. Plus the river is flushing down lots of blue crabs, which is your prime bait for black drum. And I think black drum don't get the comeuppance they deserve.
Okay.
We go out of our minds to find these schools of big bull redfish. We've got big black drum in this water all year long. They're bigger than our bull redfish. They're a better fight than our bull redfish. But they get concentrated on 2 months out of the year.
Okay. If you're lucky. But that being said, basically, personally for our area, I'm going to call it the equivalent of what the Cuda is considered in the Keys.
Now, that's an interesting analogy.
It's an underrated fish.
Okay. So here we've got a fish that's big, fights good, interesting, actually pretty much readily takes a hook. You don't have to have a lot of technical prowess to catch it, and yet it's very underrated.
Yeah, and it saves the day a lot of times. There's days where you go out and it's like, okay, the redfish might not have been cooperating that morning, but on your way back in, you stop at one of the pilings at the 41 Bridge or at Colony Point and drop a crab down, and next thing you know, you got a 40-pound black drum on. And you're super excited because you just caught a quality fish, put up a good fight, you let it go, and you're content now because you didn't get skunked and you caught something quality. Same thing goes on the Keys. You know how many days go by down there where these fish weren't cooperating and those captains will pull up on the flats and go, well, let's catch a couple Cudas and save the day with the trip.
Yeah, I mean, because if you're from the Keys, it's a Barracuda. But if you're from anywhere else, wow, I caught a Barracuda.
Right.
I mean, so going along with the black drum for just a second, any of them on the flats, bays, anywhere?
I've still been hearing of them down inside Turtle Bay. They're the smaller guys. They're, you know, the 20 to 24 inchers with an occasional, what I would say would probably be like a 20-pounder, which would be in that 30, 35-inch range. But the vast majority of them are in that 2 to 6-pound range that are moving around in there, which are a little bit better, well, much better
much
eating.
Much better eating.
You know, this time of year, you know, but they're bycatch. There's not, it doesn't seem like there's one particular spot you're actually fish in the bushes or one of the oyster bars or one of the fish shacks looking for a redfish or a snook, and, ooh, what's this? And you're like, you get excited for a second thing, and it's a redfish, and you pull up little baby black drum. You know, so it's been kind of nice for that. So those would be the areas where I would be targeting if I wanted maybe a food fish of a black drum. If I wanted to mix things up and have like a mixed fish lunch that day or whatever, and if I want a redfish or a trout and, well, you can't keep redfish right now, so let's say a trout and a drum, which would be a black drum, that's where I'd go try to find one that's more edible size.
If you've got a shallow water boat, a lot of the feeder creeks along the west wall have got those eating size black drum in them, and as far as eating, I think they're better than redfish.
I'm not a connoisseur of either one of them, so I'm more like a connoisseur.
I don't know if it's better than, but I think it's probably around equal to, as far as the redfish goes. When you've got those 18-20 inch black drum, I think it's, I don't think they're any worse than redfish or any better than. I would actually say that's a pretty good point. It's a different type of meat. It's a little flakier. The redfish isn't quite as flaky as the black drum is. So texture-wise, they're pretty different, but I would say fairly equal on quality of edibility. Now, you know, Fish and Frank's is in a very, very unique strip center, and all of these units over the decades have been kind of connected, and then they take some 2x4s and wall them off and put up the drywall, and then they, you know, then somebody, okay, I want the two of these together. And it's like between us and Sean there at Soundworks. But what's really weird is you don't always get to pick where the old openings are. And like after the first year, we're probably going to be getting another unit on that side. Well, it's kind of in the back middle of the store. And it's just, there's block wall in front, block wall in back. And then there's that just kind of opening fake wall there that's just drywalled over. And what makes it hard is we're expanding into the other side, is where the openings are not anywhere where you'd like them. And this has been one of the biggest challenges, going along with what they did 50 years ago. Okay, this is how, and it seems like everything in that unit, they built one in like 48, the next built was built this, then they said, okay, well, we'll just add this, okay, we'll put this little room on here, and we're going to leave these two walls open, but then we're going to, let's just build a whole other building around it. It is really kind of convoluted. It's going to make us, it's going to be more like the inside of a pyramid, where you got to follow down this passageway and go around this passageway to get back up into here.
Run from the big rolling rock.
Yeah. So, yeah, run from the big rolling rock. It's that's the weirdest part about when you're trying to go into the other units, is there's all the stuff that's preset. It's been there for years, but it's not exactly where you'd like it. And this has been very frustrating and very, but we're getting it. Finally got the AC fixed over there. So, anyway, everything's working out pretty good. Speaking of working out pretty good, my son's coming in tomorrow. All right? And my son, two of his buddies, they got a little mini bachelor party going on here. And we're going to take them out, and they want to catch some sharks. Now, all right, where am I going to find these sharks? Now, I've been remodeling, trying to expand the store. We've been working on all this other kind of stuff. I haven't been on the water. So, okay, I'm looking for a little help. Where are the sharks? Any ideas?
Big sharks.
Little sharks, big sharks, sharks.
If you want little sharks, Matlashay.
That's kind of what I was thinking.
You throw out a chum bag and 10 foot of water in Matlashay, you can darn near reach over the boat and grab them.
All right. Robert?
Big sharks are going to be tough.
All right, Robert, any ideas?
If it were me going to look for bigger sharks, close by, I'm going to go somewhere around between either marker 6 or...
Well, if this isn't true, you're not getting a raise.
Okay.
Did you expect one? No? I did. Fire away.
No.
Not like I was going to give him one anyway. I ain't got no money right now.
I'm either going to go to that gravel. I'm going to go fish marker 6 first. That's going to be my first shot. Without a doubt, I'm going to anchor up there and try around marker 6. And then I would also be fishing between marker 4, which is out in front of Boquilla, and that gravel bar that you named after me out there between Burnt Store and Two Pines.
Loogie's Lair.
Yes. Yeah. Something that totally
that
caught me off guard.
Great when you're allowed to name stuff. There's this... Robert loves fishing this area. Got amazing bottom. It's got all gravel down there. You get a lot of creatures crossing that. And when they go to cross that, they're very exposed. Where a lot of the harbor's mud and it's got a bunch of stuff on it, they got a lot of place to hide. In this area, crabs cross that area. They're perfectly exposed. A lot of big predators come there because they know it's an exposed area for all the bait they like to eat. And so Loogie's Lair... and it's Lugowitz over there. So
that place can be frustrating.
We just call him the Blind Tarpon.
The last time I fished there, we were shark fishing. And we sat there and caught legal gag grouper after legal gag grouper after legal gag grouper.
Wow.
But it wasn't legal season.
2 days before season opened.
So they were illegal legal gag grouper.
Do you think they were there 2 days later?
Heck
no.
I mean, I spent time growing up where you go out with your dad and you're walking through the woods, you find where every deer trail is, you sit and watch, and at 9 o'clock they cross here and that.
Yep.
And opening season comes and...
Nothing but squirrels.
Oh, yeah. If we ever do a hunting show, remind me to tell you about a deer drive, a squirrel, and my father.
Okay. That sounds like fun to begin with.
With a 308, okay? So anyway, there is, taking my son out, they want sharks. But now, in my way of figuring, if you're from Wisconsin, and these guys are all musky fishermen, so they've caught some pretty good-sized fish, not ones that fight enormously well. But I'm thinking, if I can find them any fish, a jewfish, a tarpon, a shark, as long as it's bigger than them, they ought to be happy with it.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, really, truly, if I wanted to go get a shark, I'd be running out either to the Bayeronto or down to the Mohawk Captivo Blue Hole. Because
well, we're going
to
be in Carl's Skeeter, so I ain't running out there.
If the weather's beautiful on Saturday, it might be a thought. Because out there, it hasn't been touched by any red tide at all. So you've got jewfish, Goliath grouper, you've got amberjack, and you've got the sharks that are trying to eat your amberjack that are coming up. So you've got a really good mixed barrage going on out there. So if you really wanted to hurt them and...
Yeah, well, that's my goal.
Tweak their arms a little bit.
All three of these guys, my son and his two buddies, they were all in the Army together. They all went to Iraq together. One of them's getting married. It's kind of like a mini bachelor party, you know. But so Dad's taking a bunch of them fishing. But if you were going to go out, how far out would you go out for grunts, porgies, a good dinner fish?
15 to 18 miles. I'd be going out to either the school bus or Sherman's Reef.
All right. Let's say you want a cobia. Any possibilities of cobia?
They've been showing up out there in those same spots. 15 to 20 miles. I'm hearing mixed reports of cobia, permit, bigger jack crevel, an oddball small amberjack here and there, and some good-sized barracudas.
Yeah,
that's
ball
one. And you don't have to go that far for cobia. You're going to be around Cape Hayes Reef anyways. I would give that a shot for cobia this time.
I'm not sure right now is a good idea. If we don't get some east wind, Cape Hayes Reef is going to be covered up in red tide. We need wind out of the east.
Yes, watch the wind. If we are getting wind out of the east, I would set up for cobia there. I would even try shark fishing. You've got some humps in between the opening of Bull Bay and Boca Grande Pass that I call IFHFH on my graph. I friggin' hate fishing here.
Okay.
One of my best shark holes in the harbor, unfortunately, no matter which direction the wind is blowing, it's got a 10-mile head start on you. So it's usually pretty rough out there. But if it's a nice day, a nice morning, we've had some good east winds, I would set up at Cape Hayes and then drop down there for shark.
We've all got to pray for the east winds. Otherwise, this red tide is really going to get bad. It's really going to do some damage this time. So anyway... Permit in the Gulf of Mexico?
Yeah. Permit have been out there scattered on every one of the man-made reefs. You know, I'm hearing of them from basically just off of Redfish Pass all the way up to Inglewood. Has been the most recent report, which was out there at the
Palm Harbor Ferry.
Yeah, there you go. But they've been hit or miss, so you just got to be prepared for them, watching out for them. There's been a lot of pass crabs floating in and out. You know, people have been reporting them, and a woman called me yesterday, had a bunch of them that she was watching at the drawbridge at Boca Grande when her and her husband went out bird watching, and she was curious to know about it, if they were dying or not, because she had heard that the crabs swim on the surface, but wasn't 100% sure, so she wanted reinforcement. And they've been going out of there. The guys have been seeing them literally in little groups all the way out as far as 35 miles out there fishing with pass crabs just floating by in little singles, triples, just groups of them. Pretty strange. And the only thing I can figure is that because of the red tide being here so long that we've had a good hatch, a lot of the little pass crabs stayed here and fed. Now they're starting to move offshore and getting back out to that normal stomping grounds where they should be.
Well, working at Fishing Franks is a really... answering the phone is kind of challenging sometimes, because we get calls literally about any topic you can imagine. Where's a good seafood restaurant? Do you guys serve fish and hot dogs?
A good mechanic.
Yeah, a mechanic. Where are the fish? Where's the red tide? Whenever somebody sees something abnormal in the water, and sometimes it gets a little different because we're kind of like one of those TV shows. Well, I'll tell you what, hang out here a minute. Let me call an expert.
Right.
Because Robert can answer most of the questions. I answer some. But then we've got to kind of go out through the list of all the biologists, the science, the fishing people. You know, there's so many different people with so much different knowledge. And once you understand who's the best at what, I always say, I don't have to be the smartest person in the room. I just have to know who is. And that's carried me very well. But answering the phone there is, you never know what they're going to say.
Well, and the great part about that was, though, is that I got a good kind of observational fishing report from that woman, because she's not a fisherman. Her and her husband are not fishermen. They loved a boat, but they love to bird watch. They love watching the pelicans and the terns and all that stuff and just cruising up and down the intercoastal, and they live up in Stump Pass area. So I got a good report of what death loss she was seeing. Was she smelling red tide, feeling any red tide? What other wildlife did she see, which can help better us for our accurate fishing reports?
And I'm going to say this one more time, and I do mean this, boys and girls. Go out. We've got some red tide up in Lemon Bay right now around Englewood. We've got a little bit around Boca Grande. Drive out there. Open your car window and get a feel for what red tide does. If you die, it's not my fault. Why were you listening to me in the first place? But if you go out there...
You just told them to stop what they're doing and listen to you.
If you go out there, breathe in. Feel your throat start to get scratchy, start coughing, understand what red tide does to you. It's part of the experience of life. You should know what the good things are. Yeah, everybody wants to eat a perfect banana cream cake with, you know, breadcrumb and brown sugar and all that. But the other side of life is the red tide issues. At least have half a chance of knowing what the heck you're talking about.
That's the key thing.
Understanding. Going out, being part of it. If you get out there, your throat's going to get a little scratchy. You're going to start to cough. You roll up your window. You turn your AC on max, which closes out the outside air. When your air conditioner in your car is on maximum setting, it blocks off any new air from getting in and just recirculates the air in the car. That will help you stop coughing and drive away from the beach. This is not rocket science. You drive there, you open your window, you feel your throat get scratchy, you start to cough, close the window, and drive away. You're going to be fine. If you're not, you had bigger issues than anything we were aware of, and I'm really sorry that happened to you. But you need to understand what you're talking about. You need to understand the effects on people. Look at it, breathe it, experience it. I promise you it's different than what you're going to see on the internet. Okay. One of the things my kid wants to do is catch big fish. Robert, is there big fish to catch in the harbor?
It's going to be questionable, but the tarpon are probably going to be your most realistic big fish that's been around. They're catching them out in the 20-foot holes, the mouth of the Myakka, down between Cape Hayes and Boquilla. And then there has been a few fish starting to show up down there, just basically like two pines to Matt Lachey. Been a few guys seeing some fish down there and hooking a few, but if it were me, I'd be mostly concentrating, looking in the 20-foot holes, looking for any birds that you're going to see out there, and try to get yourself some ladyfish. That's been the key thing right now, is ladyfish for bait.
And to pick up your ladyfish, Pirate Harbor, outside the bar. Or if you have a shallow enough boat, just inside the bar has been a good place to pick up good ladyfish.
Yeah, and depending on where you're coming out of, just kind of keep your eyes open, because there's been some glass minnows around. There's been a lot of small... cast nettable bait fish, but there's small fry around of thread fins and greenbacks. So when you're coming out of your canal system and crossing over, if you see any of those or any birds, start fishing around that, because the ladyfish have been mixed out in any one of the areas pretty well, too.
All right. For as far as the ladyfish, I'm just putting the hook through the lips, through the nose, letting it drift.
I like to go through the hard part of the nose, or I'll go from the bottom mouth and out through the eye socket.
Okay.
Biggest key with your ladyfish?
Yeah.
Catch them with a single hook. That is your best bet. Whether it be a jig head or a shrimp on a single hook, they usually don't live well when you catch them with a treble hook. You want these guys, for the most part, to stay alive in your live well.
I'm not that picky with mine, because I don't mind catching a ladyfish and using it whether he's dead or alive. Because I've caught too many tarpon on dead ladyfish as I have live ladyfish, so I'm not as deeply concerned about that.
All right, so you don't care if they're live or dead. Mm-hmm. Kale likes them livelier. Yep. He wants them swimming around. You don't care if they're live or dead. Nope. Me, I'm on the fence. I'm lucky. One nice thing about being Fish and Frank is I have captains.
Right.
You know, they allow me to be Fish and Frank and get out there. And RJ in the control booth allows us to keep this show going. And RJ is another walking encyclopedia type guy. Robert, our blind tarpon there, he is our walking encyclopedia. Captain Kale is here, a charter boat captain, where you can hire him to go out in his boat, or you can hire him to go out in your boat. Either way, for instructional trips or just fun for fishing. And me, I'm just Fishing Frank, and God knows what that means. All right. Well, guess we'll catch you next week on Radio Fishing, Fishing Franks, whatever the name of this show is. We're here. I'm going fish, 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 fishing. I'm going fish, 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 fishing. I'm going fishing. Hook, sinker, and line.